The Worm Ouroboros by E. R. Edison. Chapter 13. Castra Belorn. How the Lord Jus accomplished at length his dream's behest to inquire in Castra Belorn, and what manner of answer he received. That night they spent safely, by favor of the gods, under the highest crags of Castra Pervarca, in a sheltered hollow piled round with snow. Dawn came like a lily, saffron-hued, smirched with smoke-gray streaks that slanted from the north. The great peaks stood as islands above a mane of level cloud, out of which the sun walked flaming, a ball of red-gold fire. An hour before his face appeared, the demons and Mivarsh were roped and started on their eastward journey. Ill to do with as was the crest of the great north buttress by which they had climbed the mountain, seven times worse was this eastern ridge leading to Castra Belorn. Leaner of back it was, flanked by more profound abysses, deeplier gashed, too treacherous and too sudden in its changes, from sure rock to rotten and perilous. Piled with tottering crags, hung about with cornices of uncertain snow, girt with cliffs smooth and holdless as a castle wall. Small marvel that it cost them 13 hours to come down that ridge. The sun wheeled toward the west when they reached at length that frozen edge, sharp as a sickle, that was in the gates of Zimiam Via. Weary they were, and ropeless, for by no means else might they come down from the last great tower, save by the rope made fast from above. A fierce northeaster had swept the ridges all day, bringing snowstorms on its wings. Their fingers were numbed with cold, and the beards of Lord Brandok the Ha and Mavarsh Faz stiff with ice. Too weary to halt, they set forth again, just leading. It was many hundred paces along that ice edge, and the sun was near setting when they stood at last within a stone's throw of the cliffs of Castra Belorn. Since before noon, avalanches had thundered ceaselessly down those cliffs. Now, in the cool of the evening, all was still. The wind was fallen. The deep blue sky was without a cloud. The fires of sunset crept down the vast white precipices before them, till every ledge and fold and frozen pinnacle glowed pink color, and every shadow became an emerald. The shadow of Castra Pervarca lay cold across the lower stretches of the face on the Zimiamvian side. The edge of that shadow was as the division betwixt the living and the dead.
"What dost think on?" said Jus to Brandok the Ha,
that leaned upon his sword surveying that glory. Brandok the Ha started and looked on him.
"Why," said he, "on this, that it is likely thy dream was but a lure, sent thee by the king to tempt us on to mighty actions reserved for our destruction. On this side, at least, 'tis very certain there lieth no way up Castra Belorn."
"What of the little martlet?" said Jus,
"who, whiles we were yet a great way off, flew out of the south to greet us with a gracious message."
"Well, if it were not a devil of his," said Brandok the Ha.
"I will not turn back," said Jus. "Thou needest not to come with me."
And he turned again to look on those frozen cliffs.
"No," said Brandok the Ha, "nor thou with me. Thou'lt make me angry if thou wilt so vilely wrest my words. Only, fare not too securely, and let that axe still be ready in thine hand, as is my sword,
for kindlier work than step-cutting. And if thou embrace the hope to climb her by this wall before us, then hath the king's enchantry made thee fay. By then was the sun gone down. Under the wings of night uplifted from the east, the unfathomable heights of air turned a richer blue. And here and there, most dim and hard to see, throbbed a tiny point of light, the greater stars opening their eyelids to the gathering dark. Gloom crept upward, brimming the valleys far below like a rising tide of the sea. Frost and stillness waited on the eternal night to resume her reign. The solemn cliffs of Castra Belorn stood in tremendous silence, death-pale against the sky. Jus came backward a step along the ridge, and laying his hand on Brandok the Haas, "Be still," he said, "and behold this marvel." A little up the face of the mountain, on the Zimiamvian side, it was as if some leavings of the afterglow had been entangled among the crags and frozen curtains of snow. As the gloom deepened, that glow brightened and spread, filling a rift that seemed to go into the mountain.
"It is because of us," said Jus in a low voice. "She is afire with expectation of us."
No sound was there, save of their breath coming and going, and of the strokes of Jus's axe, and of the chips of ice chinking downward into silence as he cut their way along the ridge. And ever brighter, as night fell, burned that strange sunset light above them. Perilous climbing it was for 50 feet or more from the ridge, for they had no rope, the way was hard to see, and the rocks were steep and iced, and every ledge deep in snow. Yet came they safe at length up by a steep short gully to the gully's head, where it widened to that rift of the wondrous light. Here might two walk abreast, and Lord Jus and Lord Brandok the Haas took their weapons and entered abreast into the rift. M'Varsh was fain to call to them, but he was speechless. He came after, close at their heels, like a dog. For some way the bed of the cave ran upwards, then dipped at a gentle slope deep into the mountain. The air was cold, yet warm after the frozen air without. The rose-red light shone warm on the walls and floor of that passage, but none might say whence it shone. Strange sculptures glimmered overhead, bull-headed men, stags with human faces, mammoths and behemoths of the flood, vast forms and uncertain, carved in the living rock. For hours Jus and his companions pursued their way, winding downward, losing all sense of north and south. Little by little the light faded, and after an hour or two they went in darkness. Yet not in utter darkness, but as of a starless night in summer, where all night long twilight lingers. They went a soft pace, for fear of pitfalls in the way. After a while, Jus halted and sniffed the air.
"I smell new-mown hay," he said, "and flower scents. Is this my fantasy, or canst thou smell them too?"
"Ay, and have smelled it this half-hour past," answered Brandok the Haas.
"Also the passage wideneth before us, and the roof of it goeth higher as we journey."
"This," said Jus, "is a great wonder."
They fared onward, and in a while the slopes slackened, and they felt loose stones and grit beneath their feet, and in a while soft earth. They bent down and touched the earth, and there was grass growing, and night dew on the grass, and daisies folded up asleep. A brook tinkled on the right. So they crossed that meadow in the dark until they stood below a shadowy mass that bulked big above them. In a blind wall so high the top was swallowed up in the darkness, a gate stood open. They crossed that threshold and passed through a paved court that clanked under their tread. Before them, a flight of steps went up to folding doors under an archway. Lord Brandok the Ha felt M'Varsh pluck him by the sleeve. The little man's teeth were chattering together in his head for terror. Brandok the Ha smiled and put an arm about him. Jus had his foot on the lowest step. In that instant came a sound of music playing, but of what instruments they might not guess. Great thundering chords began it, like trumpets calling to battle, first high, then low, then shuddering down to silence. Then that great call again, sounding defiance. Then the keys took new voices, groping in darkness, rising to passionate lament, hovering and dying away on the wind, until naught remained but a roll as of muffled thunder, long, low, quiet, but menacing ill. And now out of the darkness of that induction burst a mighty form, three ponderous blows, as of breakers that plunge and strike on a desolate shore. A pause. Those blows again. A grinding pause. A rush of wings as of fury steaming up from the pit. Another flight of them dreadful in its deliberation. Then a wild rush upward, and a swooping again. Confusion of hell, raging serpents blazing through night sky. Then, on a sudden, out of a distant key, a sweet melody, long drawn and clear, like a blaze of low sunshine piercing the dust clouds above a battlefield. This was but an interlude to the terror of the great main theme that came in tumultuous strides up again from the deeps, storming to a grand climacteric of fury and passing away into silence. Now came a majestic figure, stately and calm, born of that terror, leading to it again, battlings of these themes in many keys, and at last the great triple blow, thundering in new strength, crushing all joy and sweetness as with a mace of iron, battering the roots of life into a general ruin. But even in the main stride of its outrage and terror, that great power seemed to shrivel. The thunder blasts crashed weaklier, the harsh blows rattled awry, and the vast frame of conquest and destroying violence sank down panting, tottered, and rumbled ingloriously into silence. Like men held in a trance, those lords of Demonland listened to the last echoes of the great sad chord where that music had breathed out its heart, as if the very heart of wrath was broken. But this was not the end. Cold and serene as some chaste virgin vowed to the gods, with clear eyes which see naught below high heaven, a quiet melody rose from that grave of terror. Weak, it seemed, at first, a little thing after that cataclysm, a little thing, like spring's first bud peeping after the blasting rain of cold and ice. Yet it walked undismayed, gathering as it went beauty and power. And on a sudden the folding doors swung open, shedding a flood of radiance down the stairs. Lord Jus and Lord Brandok Daha watched, as men watch for a star to rise, that radiant portal. And like a star indeed, or like the tranquil moon appearing, they beheld after a while one crowned like a queen, with a diadem of little clouds that seemed stolen from the mountain sunset, scattering soft beams of rosy brightness. She stood alone under that mighty portico, with its vast shadowy forms of winged lions in shining stone, black as jet. Youthful she seemed, as one that hath but just bidden adieu to childhood, with grave sweet lips, and grave black eyes, and hair like the night. Little black martlets perched on her either shoulder, and a dozen more skimmed the air above her head, so swift of wing that scarcely the eye might follow them. Meantime, that delicate and simple melody mounted from height to height, until in a while it burned with all the fires of summer, burned as summer to the uttermost ember, fierce and compulsive in its riot of love and beauty. So that before the last triumphant chords died down in silence, that music had brought back to Jus all the glories of the mountains, the sunset fires on Kostra Belorn, the first great revelation of the peaks from Morna Maruna. And over all these, as the spirit of that music to the eye made manifest, the image of that queen, so blessed fair in her youth, and her clear brow's sweet solemn respect and promise. In every line and pose of her fair form, virginal dainty as a flower, and kindled from withinward, as never flower was, with that divinity, before the face of which speech and song fall silent, and men may but catch their breath and worship. End of Part 1 of Chapter 13.